Hello and welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists and scholars from around the world. I'm Viv Davis, it's the 14th of June 2014, and today I'm speaking with Roland Coopers about his recent book, co-authored with David Collender, titled Complexity and the Art of Public Policy, Solving Society's Problems from the Bottom Up. I began the interview by asking Roland to explain what he meant by complexity.
The first thing I always try to point out to people is that complexity has a technical meaning and a more general meaning. So you can be in a complex relationship, and that means one thing, but in for our purpose, complexity has a specific definition, and it's the science of complex systems. And what are complex systems? They're systems that are deeply intertwined and interconnected. Plexus in Latin means to braid, so it's systems that you cannot pull apart without losing their essence. And of course, the way we traditionally in most scientific disciplines approach a problem is by putting it into different pieces, solving for the pieces, and then having solved for the whole. But when actually the interconnections matter a lot, you've thrown out the baby with the bathwater, literally. So in around the mid-80s, scientists from across disciplines, economists, biologists, computer scientists, got together in Santa Fe and shared this insight that actually we are not doing justice to a specific set of problems that are where the complexity nature of the system really, really matters. And if you don't study that per se, you miss the point. Scientists have always realized this. Actually, Hayek writes about this, and even Smith, actually. But people have tended to put that aside and saying, this is too hard. We don't have the mathematics to deal with it, so we'll assume away a lot of the interconnections in order to make the problem tractable. And while that's a reasonable way to start a science, at some point, you have to realize that you are actually not dealing with the whole thing. And for the past three decades, this new science across all disciplines has come up for dealing with systems in their full complexity, and mathematical systems and theories and all sorts of things have been developed to actually try to understand and grasp that. So that's complexity in a technical sense, and by all means use the word complexity for complicated in other means, but in this sense we try to make a big difference between what's complicated and what's complex. And something complicated you can take apart. So an airplane may be complicated, but in the end it's the sum of its parts. Whereas the human immune system is actually complex, because it's not the sum of the parts. The entire system is more than just all the individual bits of it.
Okay, so perhaps you could go on now to explain a little about the motivation for the book and how you structured the book and the sort of message that you wanted to convey.
Well, it started with this curious state of affairs we have in the public policy debates, whereby we have this very strong dualism of, you know, people either arguing with solutions from the top, you know, through state intervention or activist intervention, or others who argue for the power of the market in a more or less absolute sense, right? Some people are market fundamentalists, others have more mixed views. But this dichotomy very strongly colors the debate and the policy choices. And our view from our knowledge of complexity is that both of these actually miss the complexity of the system. So we started by describing how we ended up in this dichotomy. And it's one of the most curious stories, I think, of the intellectual history of the 20th century, is that it's basically a dichotomy that arose within the science of economics that translated into the public policy narratives. And, you know, many people assume that these two narratives have solid scientific foundations, but most economists will know that actually, you know, all that is very debatable and people are investigating that. But nevertheless, at the debate level, at the policy level, we've got into this lock-in of two stories and you have to choose between one and the other. And our suggestion is that the science of complexity suggests another way of approaching problems and another set of policy solutions. Now, we're very careful not to say that therefore those are the right ones, but we're saying that there's a third set that you should consider, and then you decide, you know, do you want a complexity type solution, do you want a market solution, or do you want a state intervention solution? But it should be part of the toolkit and not ignored.
Is this the complexity policy frame that you're talking about?
Yes.
And could you describe that a little for us?
Yeah, I mean, basically, because complexity is the science of interconnected systems, in a complexity frame, you look at how the government and the market co-evolve and coexist. They are not independent. Markets have been largely created. They're not natural phenomenon. And also governments have been largely created. They're also not natural phenomenon. And therefore, they have been designed and they interact. And in this complexity frame, you focus very much on the interactions between them and how you could tweak and how you can influence those types of interactions. And the conclusion, the kind of recommendations we come to, is that there is a set of policies where you need to set top-down rules, but those rules will not influence behavior directly, but they will create an ecosystem which will then engender a new type of bottom-up solutions. Now, the key thing, some people may say, oh, but, you know, that's quite familiar. And it is true that in many cases, you know, wise politicians and policymakers use this approach. But the problem we point to is that they do so, in a sense, without the frame to be able to justify and defend those policies. And what's desperately needed for the kind of interconnected problems that we increasingly face in society is this language and to have this complexity narrative and actually, you know, have debates, because there are right and wrong in that as well, and have the ability to have better complexity solutions and worse ones, and have the language to be able to debate and disagree on that.
So are you suggesting a sort of new kind of relationship or interaction between government and society, or government and people, or how do things need to have to change in order to engender this sort of grassroots social innovation or entrepreneurialism that you'd like to see?
Well, at the policymaker level, I think it's, and we hope our book contributes to that, is that policy people who are involved in policy need to be complexity literate. It needs to become part of their toolkit. And, you know, a 30-year-old science isn't exactly the newest thing. So, you know, any serious intellectual should by now have studied that to a certain extent. And that will then enable a different kind of debate. You know, to give you an example is, you know, one of the great debates in society, and it will always be, is, you know, in a sense between freedom and solidarity, and that's an important debate, and people are rightfully disagree about that. But the strange thing is that they get translated into solutions. As you say, if you're for absolute freedom, then you're for the absolute market. Equality tends to be equated with statist interventions, but that's confusing the means with the tools. And so what we're arguing is that by all means have the political debate and the grand disagreements about the, you know, the way you want to structure society, but then be more disciplined and have a richer discussion about the tools. Is when are market solutions appropriate, when are state intervention solutions, or when are these complexity kind of solutions appropriate to implement the ideals that you've so hotly debated? But these things have become joined at the hip for historical reasons, but actually wrongly so, and that's what we try to point out.
And who would you say the book is written for, or is most relevant for? Is it written for policymakers? Is it written for interested academics? Is it written for the general public? Or who's going to benefit from reading this book most?
We think all of them, in a sense, because they all play a role. It's the interested public, certainly policymakers, but I think also economists, because of the influence economics has on policy, and there's a certain responsibility, I think, that comes with the legacy and the history of economics, as it's so strongly colored the policy debates. And we've lost, you know, much of the humanities and psychology and all the other disciplines, and that has impoverished. And you know, all the other disciplines are at fault in many ways as well. This is a very messy story.
So have macroeconomists got it wrong, or have they never had it right?
I think neither one. I think the mistake is a deeper one. The approach of macroeconomics with general equilibrium theory and all these kinds of things is perfectly reasonable. I mean, I'm a physicist, and you know, in the 19th century, physics, you know, also made gross simplifications, and that's the way you get started in a discipline. Is where macroeconomics went off tracks, I think, is when people started asserting that they were making statements about the real world with very incomplete models. And there's nothing wrong with having incomplete models, because that's the state of the art of knowledge. But if you oversell them, then there's something deeply wrong with that. And any macroeconomist, modeler you ask, will in private acknowledge that their models are just, you know, a very gross approach. But not the footnotes have gotten lost, in a sense. And I think that's a deep, that's almost an ethical problem, because it has a deep influence on the world. And there's no individual at fault, and this is something that happened very gradually in the course of the 20th century through all sorts of people. But I think, so to answer your question, there's nothing wrong with the models, because that's as far as we've gotten, and we think actually that in complexity science there's some new and interesting models, but which macroeconomists are also working on. But the problem is at the science-policy interface, where it gets oversold, and you know, one very concrete example is in the great debates around climate policy, is where all sorts of grandiose statements are made about the macroeconomic costs of climate policy over 10 years, 50 years, some people make statements of 100 years, which are manifestly devoid of any meaning in reality, and yet they influence the decisions we make about climate policy. And so that's a real problem. So the models are fine, you know, do your best, but be very, I think macroeconomists or macroeconomics should be very careful in not losing the footnotes.
Yeah. So finally, Roland, if you could sum up for us the key policy messages that you think are most relevant and important coming out of this book.
I mean, we give a set of examples and illustrations of various policy areas around structuring corporations. We talk about for-benefit corporations as a new way of organizing commercial and activities. We talk about healthcare, climate policy, and all these things. But in the end, they're illustrations of the fact that this different approach enabled in the complexity frame should be acquired in the toolkit of policymakers. This isn't about any kind of silver bullet or seven easy rules to change the world, but it's the hard work of understanding this new world of complex systems that we deal with, but actually the exciting world of the fact that we know something about these systems that we didn't know 50 years ago or 100 years ago. And that new state of knowledge, I think, is incredibly exciting for scientists, but also for policymakers, because it opens up new avenues that we haven't considered before. But you actually have to get a sense of this complexity frame and everything that's happening in this discipline in order to be able to have those discussions and have the language to make sense of those options and not fall back into the dichotomy of the state versus the market, because that really, you know, extinguishes the debate, and you can then not consider these solutions.
Roland Coopers, thanks very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.